Hey guys, this is Luminous.
And this is Rico.
And welcome to another episode of the Top Deck Time. This is episode 11, and we have not a generalized topic this week, but we have a lot of individual cards to talk about. So let's get to it. The first card we're going to start with is Banish. And Rico, you want to quickly read out what Banish does?
Sure, it's a 4 power, 1 time, 1 shadow influence. It's a fast spell, and it reads, kill an enemy unit or relic with cost 4 or less.
So a 4 power Xenon fast spell. Deathstrike right. Plus Decay-ish?
Ish. Pretty psyched about the card, because it gives you a way on ladder to interact with attachments, which right now you basically only have Furnace Mage that isn't totally dead if they don't have a relic, and it's not great. So I think it's a great card for ladder.
Yeah, I think the key point you made there is the ladder, right? Because in tournament play, people play Ruin, they play Decay, they play Furnace Mage with no problem, because even though these cards are essentially very inefficient to put it in the main deck, when you are blowing up their Xenon Obelisk or whatever, when you bring it out of your sideboard, you know it's going to be 100% good. Yeah. And for ladder, since it's a best of one, you can't just put Ruins in your deck without... I know, like, the Fire Primal Shadow deck do play a couple copies of Ruin because they're trying to be controlling that way, but I think most decks are unable to slot those kind of main deck relic hate.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Yeah, just the downside of drawing it in a matchup where they don't have a relic is way too huge. Banish gives you a great way to like kind of go around that problem on ladder. So what's interesting is that you will never ever trade up in power.
Yes.
And I think that's somewhat important to keep in mind. Like, you are going to destroy things that cost 2 or 3 sometimes, and that's putting you behind on tempo. So what you gain in flexibility, you kind of pay back in power. That's something to keep in mind, definitely. Like, the reason that Deathstrike is not a 4-off in a lot of decks and not even a 2-off anymore is that the 4 power is actually a very... very large amount of power. It's very hard to spend a whole turn just killing one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the added flexibility of Banish kind of makes up for that.
We're basically judging Banish, which is a set 2 card, obviously, in the context of set 1. Like, you know, in set 2, maybe the threats, whether it's the units or the relics that are being played, they might just cost 5, 6, or 7. Where the game gets slowed down, where a card like Banish doesn't do that much at all. But under the context of what's being played in set 1, imagine this existing in a format where Shimmer Pack is being played. Like, Shimmer Pack just gets ripped apart completely when Banish is running around. At least that's how I think I could see that happening. Armory has a tougher game now because pretty much a lot of their early efficient removal from Armory gets destroyed. Can you imagine, like, you equip an Orc Runehammer and you think you're top dog attacking in, and they're like, no, Banish. You're like, oh, okay, well, my relic just got destroyed.
Yeah, and I think especially against Armory, it's very nice that you have a removal spell that isn't just dead, because against Armory, they mostly only run, like, Recano Artisans, which you don't really care about killing, and Throne Ones, which you have to kill twice, and Ikaria, which you have to kill twice as well. So your removal is mostly very, very bad in the matchup. Drawing a couple of Vanquishes or Annihilate in the matchup just can really do you in, and now you can actually draw a removal spell that does something. It's still not super great, but the flexibility helps a lot in this matchup, and it's very, very good against the obelisk lists as well, because they're in those matchups, like, you don't really want to be drawing a whole lot of spot removal, right? Because they can just reload so quickly, and they mostly have some ways to generate more units at once. So trading 1 for 1 generally isn't the best against them, but hitting their obelisk is actually very huge.
If you get the relic, great. But it feels like if you're hitting anything apart from relic, Banish still is not an amazing card.
It's totally not. No, but I'm just comparing it to the removal spells we have access to right now. And compared to an Annihilate or a Deathstrike, I'd much rather have this against those decks.
One more comparison I want to make between Banish and Deathstrike is that I feel like Banish is ultimately easier to cast for the decks that are in Xenon faction than the double Shadow. Because I think a couple of weeks ago when we played the, what is it, a Xenon plus Primal deck?
Mm-hmm.
Rather, I think it's more Legion plus Shadow. Mm-hmm. We were saying that Deathstrike was actually one of the harder cards to cast in that deck, right?
Because yeah, definitely. If you want to go modern, three factions, it becomes hard to reliably get double of each. So
right.
not having any double cards certainly helps there.
Again, set one lenses on this card. As we see more set two cards, maybe we'll have to reevaluate how good Banish is. But imagine if you just have access to Banish right now, I would say a lot of decks get stronger slash weaker. Do you think, for example, if Chalice is going to be as strong as currently is if Banish exists in the metagame?
It really depends on the number of Banishes and on the deck that is actually playing the card. Like, we don't know any Xenon yet, but certainly, like, a way to get rid of the namesake card of the deck is is a huge boon. I'm not going to lie. So, the one funny thing about the restriction of cost far or less is that generally against decks that play a lot of cheap units, you don't really want to be drawing your Deathstrike, and that's what I compare it to mostly because of the four power cost. And against the decks that you would like to have a Deathstrike against, the restriction on the power cost is actually very relevant.
I think this is a card that's really efficient against more mid-range slash control decks. It's basically a multi-removal spell that isn't dead in as many matchups, right? It's like holding Vanquishes against Armory, like you said. It's just a dead removal.
Exactly. Majority of the time. Yeah. Like, it will never be great. There will always be a better removal option for you. But the fact that it does at least something against... I don't want to say every deck, but the largest portion of the field...
Pretty much every deck.
Yeah, pretty much every deck, actually. Is certainly a large help for the card. And that's exactly... Like, it's, as I said, it's great for ladder, because there you don't know what you're going to be facing. I don't expect this popping up in large numbers in tournament lists where you have the sideboard, or if we get a game mode with sideboard, I expect the numbers of banishes to be a little bit lower there. But again, for ladder, it's great.
I think the final thing I want to say about Banish is this is like a very classic card game. Like, you're trading off power for flexibility. There you go. You see a lot of, like, for example, Magic the Gathering had these like cycle of charms where you get like multiple modes of the card.
Mm-hmm.
And each mold is very inefficient compared to the mana cost that you're paying for the mold.
Yeah.
But then the fact that it combines multiple molds in a card where no matter when you draw it, it's still decent. It's still okay. It makes it overall a very powerful card. And Banish reminds me of that.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. I think it's overall a very nicely designed card because it's never going to be broken and it's never going to be bad. It's just a fine card like always, and that's really hitting the sweet spot from card design perspective, in my opinion.
I think that's actually like most of Eternal card design, right? A lot of cards are quite strong, but not overpowered. So, anyways, a sweet transition to our next card, Veteran Mercenary.
Speaking of not overpowered.
All right, so if you're logged into Eternal, which I'm sure you have in the last couple of days, you know that we have more promo cards going on, and you can earn Veteran Mercenary for each first win of the day. And it's a 5-power factionless card. Is there a name for such thing?
I don't think so.
So we'll just call it factionless, 5-power factionless. Yeah. It's a 6/4 soldier.
Neutral. It's called neutral. Okay, I just looked it up.
All right, neutral. It reads, summon. If you have only one type of influence, draw a random card of that faction. So if you're playing mono time, mono primal, mono shadow, mono fire, or mono justice, and you play this card, draw a card from that faction.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were jokingly stating earlier, it's a power creep because shadow has this 6-power 6/4 beast,
Dire
I believe.
Wood Rampager.
Direwood Rampager. And now every deck will have a better option than Direwood Rampager.
That's realistic power creep here. okay, on a more serious note, getting the, like understanding the ability is a bit tricky, I think. Like, we were talking about a little bit earlier, if you would play a 5-power 6/4 that you can only run in mono faction decks that draws a card.
Right.
And I think it's interesting to talk about that comparison, right?
You were saying drawing a card from your deck is always going to be better than drawing a random time or primal card because
No, it's not always going to be
likely.
better because the random aspect like gives you outs that you wouldn't normally have in your deck. Like for example, you
True.
could draw a decay if you're playing mono time and you don't
Right,
have those in
but
your deck and it could be nice. But in general, I think
logic states like you're only putting quote unquote good cards in your deck, right? You're putting
exactly.
Sandstorm Titans in your deck. So you're gonna if you're drawing from your deck, you're drawing more likely a Sandstorm Titan. Whereas if you're drawing a random time card, you're drawing Humbugs, possibly. So you're making a comparison of drawing from your deck versus drawing from a random pool of card. To them, which I replied, but then you could also draw sigils from the top of your deck. Which, as far as I know, I don't think you could draw time sigils from veteran mercenary.
I am not sure that's true because like the sigils are of the faction, at least in deck builder, and they count towards your faction in the deck.
True.
So I'm not sure you can't draw one, but let's assume you can't, for the sake of
Okay.
argument.
Sure.
So in that case, I think Veteran Mercenary is like the random card you get is mostly going to be worse than a random card from your deck. For example, if you play a deck that just stops its power curve on 5, in that case, just a random card will be better than a sigil,
Okay.
mostly.
Provided you could cast it.
E true.
Because, you
True.
might get
Provided it
a
ain't
seven
an eight
cost.
drop. Yeah.
Yeah.
True. That's true.
Yeah,
But most of the time I think that just drawing the card is just way preferable. Like if your curve goes up a little bit, or even like even if it isn't, I think that you're about 1 in 3, maybe a little bit more, to draw a sigil from your deck. But the other 2 in 3 are, as you said, mostly going to be better because you put better cards than random cards in your deck.
right. I mean, I could think of various ways to like buff the card. One suggestion I made earlier is that if you're playing, let's say, time, mono time, you could get Elysian cards or Combrate cards because generally multi-faction cards are stronger than, individual faction cards. So if you have access to that pool of cards that you could randomly get as well, that might be quite strong. Maybe you could get an option to choose whether you could draw a random card or a card from your deck. That would
I mean,
maybe even make this card great, but
that would be a huge buff. But I don't think that they will buff this anytime soon. Like I'm n not
yeah.
seeing that happening.
I mean, we are talking about this under the assumption that it's not a strong card. Who knows? Maybe this is the new next deck.
I think it's fine. Obviously, right now in the context of only set one, there are very few incentives to go monocolor. This is the one that goes over all 5 factions, and then each faction has a card that counts the amount of influence you have. Like for example, Flashfire or Mantle of Justice, I think it is.
Sure.
There's very very little incentive to go mono faction right now, but that could easily change. And like, I think this is a strong card still. Like a 5 power 6/4 that gives you an additional card, even though it's random, is still pretty good. The problem is not A, not having control over what card you draw, and B, you would really need want you would need to want a 6/4 in your deck. Like some decks aren't interesting in a vanilla 6/4. I think you
Sure.
gotta be beating down, and then if you're beating down, like would you want to play a 5-power card? If you're playing mid-range, is this ever going to be enough?
I mean, a 5-power 6-4 is not terrible. Like, compared to, let's say, the 6-5 from the time, the dinosaur, Towering
Sure.
Terrazzon. Like, it's not a great card. You don't see it in Constructed, but it's
Yeah, you
also
never
okay.
run
It's
it in
serviceable.
Constructed.
Yeah.
It's serviceable. But I mean, the comparison here is a little bit off because time obviously gets the largest units, so maybe
Sure.
if you want to
Let's
play it
say
in a.
like Primal or Shadow in particular.
Yeah.
Like they don't have many big units, so having a 6-4 there might be. I mean, it's better than the that 6-4 beast that I don't even know the name of because it's not worth remembering its name.
Direwolf
Direwood Rampager. There you go.
Rampager. Another thing that I've found funny, at least, is this doesn't die to Annihilate because it has no faction. But then again, every other card in your deck does. So that's
right.
That's not a huge upside, I'd say.
It doesn't die to banish.
Sure. Dodges banish.
There you go. So you know Veteran Mercenary is a one card infinite combo?
How so?
So you play Veteran Mercenary.
And you play Primal and get Mirror Image every time?
Yes, you get Mirror Image every time, and then you Mirror Image into more. It's infinite value. I think we did it. That's the new tier one tournament deck. Yeah. Everyone's gonna be start playing Backlashes, and then we're gonna see like Backlash into your Backlash, into my Backlash, just to prevent
Epic
the Mirror Image Veteran Mercenary combo. You heard it here, guys. Top deck time.
What I want to talk about is the fact that that's a very nice design idea, making factionless cards that are actually monocolored. If you get what I'm saying, like I'd be interested in seeing more cards like this. Like I think it would be interesting to see like what is the mono time veteran mercenary deck look like. What does the mono shadow veteran mercenary deck look like, and if there are more cards like this, I think it could be pretty interesting to see the different types of deck spawning. Like there was, I don't know if you played Magic the Gathering back then, but there was in Theros block there was this ability called Devotion that heavily rewarded you for being monocolored, and the different kind of Nykthos decks were, I think it was interesting that this card could spawn that many different archetypes. Nykthos was a Lanzo in Eternal, it would have been a power that gave you additional power for each colored mana symbol you had among permanents you controlled. So it naturally went into many different decks, and I think that's interesting, and I would like to see that. Also, it's pretty interesting in draft, I think, because all of a sudden players might be playing completely different factions but still fighting over the same cards.
Well, in draft in particular, it's hard to, first of all, get multiple veteran mercenaries. And actually,
yeah,
more
absolutely
difficult to get veteran mercenaries because you can't get, you know.
Yeah, but I mean,
cards.
If they made more cards like this, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see.
Like
the
design idea behind the card, if they made some cards like this, I think it would be interesting to see what happened. And I think it's a pretty cool design, even though it's not a top-notch card.
Now that you talked about the design philosophy and such, it recalled me to another podcast I've listened to from MTG. I want to say it was a modern podcast where they invited Patrick Chapin to go on and speak. And as you know, Patrick Chapin is one of our designers for Eternal. And one thing that Patrick Chapin said he really disliked from Magic is the way that they did artifacts. In the sense that artifacts are factionless cards that any deck could play them, but the way that Magic has designed it in the past is that artifacts started to creep more and more into the color pie philosophy. So if you don't play Magic has five colors, very similar to Eternal, that each individual color is supposed to do one thing or a certain set of things that the other colors shouldn't have access to. So the very simple example is that like fire or red is supposed to have direct damage. Blue is supposed to be like, well, counterspell or bounce effects.
Drawing cards,
that kind of stuff. But then over time, as more and more artifacts are made, you can find artifacts that gave you direct damage. You can find artifacts that gave you card draw. I don't know if there's a counterspell artifact, but you know what I mean, right? Like the color pie gets really messed up by essentially factionless cards. And I think that's very lazy design. And I feel like a card like this, Veteran Mercenary, you could say this is a factionless card. At the same time, it doesn't break it, if that makes any sense.
And it
like,
doesn't give you access to anything your faction can't do, because you can only draw a card in your faction.
Exactly. Like, you're not going to suddenly play Mono Time and, oh, I got a Torch. Like,
yeah.
that would be like Hearthstone-esque kind of territory, but this is not. This is like a very nice type of random. It's not very powerful. But at the same time, I feel like it's a very good design, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too.
Someone that knows nothing about design in general, but I just like this kind of design. I'm surprised that we spent a good 15 minutes on Veteran Mercenary, because when I saw this card spoil, I was like, oh, it looks rather boring. because I had mono time in my mind when I thought about this.
Yeah, but I think that's the same with a lot of cards I've seen, actually. Like, when I first saw the expansion, the Varus Journey, I wasn't excited about any card of those, but now I like all of them, so that's something that they keep doing to me. They release a card and I'm like, yeah, and the more I think about it, the more I'm like, hey, this is actually a pretty cool card.
Yeah, I mean, as we said many times in the past in this podcast, is that Eternal, at least set one, is very deep. And we might have to extend this statement about set one to like set two in the future, because it feels like all the cards that they're pumping out are, again, it doesn't seem very exciting on paper, but as you play more and more with it, and us being very heavily invested in this game, we think about various different combinations of the cards and decks. Yeah, I think that the cards are well designed, and I hope to see more of stuff like this.
For sure.
Okay, so Warp is a mechanic that we touched on in the past, but when we discussed it in the past, we had no idea what Warp did. But now we do. Now we do. It says you could play Warp cards the turn before you draw them. So let's say you have a Warp card on the top of your deck. You now could see that card. It's not in your hand, but it kind of is for this discussion. And you could play them off the top of your deck. So we had two Warp cards. Or did I leave out anything about the Warp discussion?
No. If it's on top of your deck, it's revealed to you and you can play it from the top of your deck.
If it has a warp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were two warp cards revealed in the past. Mm-hmm. And it was, I believe, a 3 and a fire. Deal 2 damage. We don't know if it's a fast spell or not, but I assume it is a fast spell.
Like, in my mind, it's a spell only, but I'm not 100% on that.
Okay, let's pretend it's a fast spell. Obviously, it's a bit stronger, or rather, a lot stronger.
Yeah.
For the sake of this discussion, let's assume it's a fast spell, okay?
Okay.
Because I'm sure there's gonna be a warp fast spell in design, right? That is possible. So let's assume it's a fast spell. Deal 2 damage. You could cast it off the top of your deck. Is that good?
I don't think so. And so the reason I don't think it's very great is a 2 damage doesn't kill a whole lot. 3 power is quite a lot to deal with a small unit only, and like, think about it that way. If this said draw a card instead of warp, I think we can agree that it would be way better, right?
I mean, warp sort of says draw a card, right? But just not every time.
And I yeah, that's but only a, in those that's instances the point you're trying to... where yeah, that's the point I'm trying to get across here. Like, it only says, quote-unquote, draw a card if and only if, like, you don't have this in your hand. Warp cards are very bad in your opening hand, for example. And also, if you're able to cast them, which might not be the case every time you have this on top of your deck, and then if you want to even cast it that turn, or play it this turn. Like, for example, if you reveal this on turn 4 and you hold a Sandstorm Titan, you still play the Sandstorm Titan, right? And then you're stuck with an Alchemical Blast.
I think that's actually the most important point that a lot of players might not think about. Is like, just because you go warp doesn't mean you should warp at certain situations. Because sometimes you just have a better play in your hand. So the Sandstorm Titan was a great example there. So far, the two cards that are revealed to us, the other one being a 3 power time card, it's a 1/1 dinosaur with flying, I believe, and it also gives you +1 maximum influence. So, one maximum power. I mean, that I like that card a bit more because it helps you with casting more warp cards in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. So when warp was first spoiled, I was like, oh, you know, I could now play a deck that essentially plays a lot of power, and then I could just like churn through my deck and basically play these like underpowered cards in my deck, but play a bunch of them because I could, like chain warp essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you're just playing underpowered cards. Like you're warping 2 damage into 2 damage. It's like, well, I'm quote unquote going off, but then very inefficiently.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I'm pretty sure that we will see stronger cards with warp as well. Like, for example, if they spoiled, someone posted this, I don't know where and I don't know who, I'm sorry if I don't quote the person here correctly, but they said that, imagine that there was no Warcry, and then there would be a set release, and the first spoiled card would be Loyal Watchwing.
Right.
Like, the card isn't great, the card isn't being played and constructed, and it's not even super good in draft, but that doesn't mean Warcry isn't good in constructed, right?
Part of me says, if you're a company that you're trying to spoil cards to make people excited, you don't spoil Loyal Watchwing as the first card featuring that mechanic.
Sure.
And to be fair, these warp cards that are spoiled isn't part of the official spoilers, right? Like, that's coming out next week.
Yeah.
By the time you hear this podcast, you probably see some, like, official spoilers from DWD. Like, these warp cards that are being spoiled is pretty much Scarlash just feeling, I guess, pitiful for us, because we keep complaining about
throwing
not
us
having
a bone.
Yeah, pretty much. At least that's how I think it is, right? Because would you spoil Hipshot or Rimshot or whatever that card is as
Hipshot?
Your first warp card?
I think it's... Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, because it showcases a new mechanic, and just, like, you're spoiling the mechanic more than you're spoiling a card.
I suppose. I guess. Like, if... Okay, I don't know anything about running a digital card game company, but if I was DWD and I would spoil the following card, I would say, you know, 5 power with Praxis requirement, Relic. Your cards have warp. You know, that's the card that I would spoil.
Alright, calm down.
Is that card OP?
Oh yeah, way.
Alright, how much would you price that card? Or cost that card?
So this card exists in Magic, and it costs 5, and it's an enchantment, but the games are very different. Like, most of the cards are...
It's the triple,
like,
blue one, right?
Yeah,
what
it's
was it
triple
called?
Blue. It's Future Sight. And Future Sight, I love that card, and I try to play this often as possible because I think it's just amazing. I would say in Eternal, it would have to be at least 7 power. Yeah, probably on a unit, not on the Relic. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it depends. It seems like set 2 is going to have a little bit more, you know, Relic Destruction, so who knows?
Sure. I guess. I don't think I would, like, want to release this card, though. Like, this card will never be okay. Like, it will either be bad or it will be very, very, very broken. So, And that just depends on the cards you're going to print next or release next. And I think it really limits the design space you have for future cards.
It seems like these cards that have been revealed with warp is cost with warp in mind, right? Because you would never pay 3 power to deal 2 damage. Like, you would not play Alchemical Blast.
Yeah, obviously. You play a steep cost for that.
You pay the cost for warp. But I'm sure there is going to be at least one pushed warp card.
Yeah.
So maybe the warp part of it is coming for free, essentially. And whether that is going to be the Sandstorm Titan, whether that's going to be the Champion of Chaos of the new set, we'll see.
Sure. One last thing I want to talk about warp is that I originally I wouldn't have seen this mechanic in Praxis, to be honest. I would have seen this ability being more of a Skycrack identity from what we've seen so far.
For sure, yeah.
So I was kind of surprised it's Praxis, and I'm curious how Praxis will look after set 2, because, like, right now Praxis is only, or not only, but, like, Praxis is very unit
based.
Yeah, unit centric and swarm centered, so I'm not sure how the cards will look like. I'm kind of excited, because, yeah, as I said, I would have thought that Skycrack would have been a better fit, but we will see where they take those identities come set 2.
I actually am glad that Praxis is getting a different angle of attack, right? Because it feels like nowadays, if you play Praxis, it's Arcano Monitor. You're just flooding the board, you're killing them with units. But warp seemingly is taking you into a different direction, more value-based, trying to draw the game out more. And at least that personally speaks to me as more in terms of the style that I want to play. So I'm excited to see what Praxis bring in the future as well. So yeah, this is... Looking pretty good here. Which, by the way, official spoilers are coming out from Monday in the DWD. So by the time that you hear this podcast again, you'll see spoilers. And I know we spent so far 30 minutes, 35 minutes talking about three cards. I think we're gonna have to go a little bit faster, Rico. I don't know if you.
I mean, I think those cards and mechanics are interesting enough to speak a little bit about it, and yeah,
Sure.
I think it's okay.
But that is all the new cards that we've known. Let's talk about the event that was released
Yes.
this past weekend. Why don't you quickly take us through what the cost of entry is, what the rewards are, and so on and so forth.
All right, so they did a test run of the event, and you paid 2,000 gold to enter, or I guess 200 diamonds if you're inclined to do so. And
Yeah, so
then
$2.
so you enter with a constructed deck, and you can't change the deck for as long as you're in the event. And then you play until you either got 7 wins or 2 losses. So if you lose 2 times, the event is over. If you win 7 times, the event is over. And then you get prizes based on the amount of wins you got. And this for this event, they try to lure a lot of people in just to try if it's stable and just to try out this new mode. So the prize payout is actually insane. Like if
Insane
you yeah it
value.
yeah it is it is. If you owe 2, you get 3 packs. You still get 3 packs for winning 0 times. And that's basically you spending 2,000 bucks on 3 packs. And normally if you bought a pack in store, you would have to pay 1,000 gold, which obviously you shouldn't do. You should draft, but still, that's very, very good value. And if you manage to get a couple more wins, the rewards are very, very nice as well. Like if you, for example, go 3 and 2, you get 4 packs and 2 premium uncommons for 2,000 gold, and that's just super good already.
I wouldn't know the feeling of going 3 and 2 because
Yeah,
I only
you
go
either go
seven
1, 2,
wins.
or 7 wins.
We'll talk about our gaming experience in a bit, but
Okay,
yeah,
and
sorry to
so
cut you off.
for 7 wins, you get 6 packs and 2 premium legendaries.
Damn.
I think that's insane. Like, you get a premium legendary for reaching master in a season, or you can just, I don't know, win seven
Spend
games and,
2,000 gold,
yeah.
easy, no problem.
Obviously, getting to 7 wins is very unlikely because you can only lose 1 game on the way, so you have to go 7-1 in 8 games, which is very, very rough, I'd say. But
Well, here's the thing, right? Because it's so good value, everyone's playing it, including people that don't have good collection, including people that torch you on turn one, which we did lose to that
And
opponent.
win, yeah.
Because we do not draw sigils. But the point stands, it's not as hard as you think to get 7 wins.
Yeah, it's certainly possible.
Yeah. I mean, I got 7 wins, so
So here's the thing. I'm very certain that matchmaking is not the same as in on ladder, because like both Luminous and I played against people who obviously were new to the game, who didn't have a big collection. So you wouldn't get paired against those if you played ranked, right?
sure.
So that's a disadvantage for the newer players, but the advantage being that you can get packs so easily with this and at a way faster pace than in draft, so you can actually use this event to build your collection in a very efficient way.
Okay, so first of all, again, like you said, they are using this price tag to lure people in, right? They want to test.
Definitely. So it won't be as good as this anymore.
Well,
Like
I think that Starwood
that's pretty
Digital
safe
should
to
do
assume.
this in the future. Like, maybe like during Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, sure,
I
for
don't.
holidays, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not have a
During.
holiday event? Yeah,
Yeah.
certainly.
And just make it super cheap to it. Because it just is a feel good moment, right? Like, I
For
have.
sure.
You saw my game. I have like over 150K stone.
Yeah.
And I don't need to play in this event. But you bet for sure after recording this podcast, I'm gonna go play more because it is good value. I'm gonna
Oh
get a
yeah.
couple more premium legendaries. So, you know. That's good stuff. Okay, so pretend that you got the ears of DWD, right? They're obviously mm-hmm. doing this to get feedback, stress tests. What are some feedbacks that you would give based on what you saw over your run?
I think that you could, in theory, try and make matchmaking a little bit more balanced. Like, obviously, it's super good for me if I play against players who don't have a good collection yet and who play, I'd say, tier 2 or 3 decks at best. But I don't think it's great for them. And I always think that you should watch out for the new players in events like this. Like, you don't want to get your new players destroyed by the players who are playing for a long time and have a fully built collection.
For sure.
So that's something I would want them to implement. Although it gets way worse for me, but I think it's more important that new players are having a good experience.
Yeah, I think this is where you could rank by MMR, like they currently do for mm-hmm. ladder, but even a more simpler system is to just rank based on queue into people that have the same wins as you do.
Yeah.
Obviously, because this is a test event, they just want to make sure games fire immediately, which was great. They did, like it was 10 second queues.
I had 2 or 3 second queues even.
Yeah.
They fired immediately, right? For me. Yeah. Because everybody wants to play them. They are so good.
Right. But imagine in a world where there's more players in Eternal and everyone's playing this event already, you want to queue the 5-win players into the 5-win players. You don't You know, we had 4 or 5 wins and opponent played Hero of the People.
Yeah.
Which, it's an okay card, but, you know, it's not going to be good when I'm playing Auric Runehammer and slamming into it. You know, it's a 1-1. So there's that.
It's very easy to lose 2 games. I would like to, if I enter an event, be able to lose at least 2 times and still be able to play on.
But so kind of feel like the draft event?
Yeah, I like being, like, okay, so here's the thing. In Eternal, there's variance, and you will lose a game sometimes where you just don't draw what you need or you don't draw power or whatever. And that's totally fine for me on ladder. But I would like to be able to compensate for that a little bit more efficiently in an event like this. So increasing the amount of times you can lose by 1 would be great. Obviously, then you would have to restructure the prices or maybe go up higher with the wins so that it's still very hard to get to the full wins. But that would make me feel better, especially when I am spending real money on this.
Part of me does agree with your sentiment, but at the same time, the other part of it is shorter events are just better in the sense that it's less of a time commitment. People could play it more easily, more feasibly. So,
yeah, that's a fair point, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. In general, I feel like Eternal games don't take a lot of time anyways, and they are not best of 3, so
Talk about that. Like, you know, I think last week when we kind of alluded to a future mm-hmm. event coming, we were kind of talking about best of 3. Now, having played this event, I kind of feel like it's not so bad that isn't best of 3. Yes, like the competitive side of me says, oh, I want a sideboard. I want to bring in my decays and banish to, you know, wreck that guy. But there's something that feels really nice about, okay, I win my game, Q, go next. You know, there's no...
Yeah.
Cyborging and all that jazz, you know?
No, I think, like, yeah, it feels very good for this event, and I don't think that you would want events with a best out of 3, but I would like to have a tournament queue, if that makes sense, like the draft queue where you go best of 3. That's just a queue that you can access whenever, and the prize payout obviously can be way worse for that, because you can just also use this to test for a tournament if you play in the ETS, for example, and that would be just a nice mode to have. But I think for events, it's the best of 1 makes sense, and I like it, actually. Oh, do you think they will be making a sealed event? That would be cool. Like the pre-releases in Magic.
So, for people that have never played a Magic pre-release, a sealed event is where, I believe, you open 6 booster packs.
Exactly.
And you build a deck out of that.
You open 6 packs and make a deck out of it, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the pre-releases are awesome. They are awesome. I would love that.
Yeah. They should do that. I don't know.
I don't see why not. I well, don't see why not, right?
Time, right? They're working on so many different things right now.
But I don't think that's very hard to implement, right?
I'm pretty sure we'll see it in the future, but maybe not for the
I wouldn't be too sure. Like, most of the designers are Magic players, and all of them know that pre-releases are a thing that attract a ton of people. Like, I work in a local gaming store, and at the pre-releases, we have so many people that don't play Magic anymore, a lot, and they still come for those pre-release events.
I'm guilty as charged. I never play Magic events except pre-release, because it's good value, too. In my Magic store, you get a pack extra for every win you get at the pre-release.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, this is where the shady Luminous comes out, because, you know, I play card games, even though I don't play Magic. But generally, like, a good percentage amount of the time, the person sitting across from me is the person that played less Magic than me. So likely, I'm going to build a better deck. I'm going to stand a better chance to earn prizes. So I'm every pre-release event, I'm just going out there to shark some kids. I don't feel
also,
bad
it's
at
just
all,
an amazing way to get to acquire new cards.
Sure.
Like, I would totally draft when set 2 comes out, but if there were pre-release queues, I'd seal the hell out of that.
I mean, I think the speaking about MTG seal events, like, there's something really nice about, like, opening pack, the physical part of, like, ripping open the plastic.
Sure, yeah.
Smelling the new cards, looking through them, discovering delicious that, oh my goodness, man. I got a foil planes. Awesome, you know?
All over the room, people are going crazy about some rare they open, and it's just such an exciting atmosphere. Obviously, you lose some of that, but I still think that, like, those sealed events are just super good for
I think you
everybody,
lose most
basically.
Of it. I think you lose most of it, because, like, there are sealed events on Magic the Gathering Online, and I don't come close. I mean, they are flooded. Like, people play because it's a new set and it's good value, but I don't think you get the same level of enjoyment nearly as much as going to a store playing a sealed event there, right?
Obviously, but you won't go to a store and play Eternal, so...
I mean, Hearthstone has Fireside Gathering, you know? You know what they are?
Pardon me?
Hearthstone has these things called Fireside Gatherings.
I don't know
what
people, it is.
Where people, like, actually just, like, localized in a pub or in just like a building.
Oh, okay.
They have Wi-Fi set up and they just bring their iPad and play.
Oh,
and
that's
Blizzard
nice.
Is trying to push it more by supporting with price structure and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so don't say never, man. It is a thing, at least in Hearthstone. But, you know. Anyways. What were we talking about? We're talking about an event. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, going back to the event.
Because, like, what this event did for me is I had to think about a lot of ways that they could do future events, because, like, I don't think they will be doing a lot of events like this one. I think they just tried the function and tried what happens if a lot of players play a certain type of mode. Like, I think there will be there's a lot of possibilities they could do with events. Like, I'm very excited.
Judging from what you're saying, it seems like you're saying that this event button will be grayed out most of the time.
I think so.
I think that would be the smart way to do it. So, for example, Hearthstone has this thing called Heroic Brawl that they do, like, maybe once a month or something,
mm-hmm.
where you put a lot of gold on the line to play in a constructed event. So, very mm-hmm. similar here. And you get crazy prize payout when mm-hmm. you get 12 wins in that game. But they don't do it all the time. And I feel like if you do it all the time, then the allure of the event goes away, right?
Yeah, it takes the specialness away. And I don't think that there will be an event available all the time. I think they will be spaced out over the year. And that's...
That's good. I think that's
better.
Yeah,
that's good. That's how I would want it, at least.
Yeah. But speaking to what you said, you do still want some sort of more competitive environment than the ladder that is available 24/7 to play. Whatever it's a tournament league structure with a best of three or something else, right? You want at least the option to play that?
I would like to see that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't need it and I don't think they have to do it, but I think it would be very nice and I would definitely enjoy playing that.
Yeah. Actually, speaking to the limited time events, in Dota 2, there is this thing called Battle Cup right now, mm-hmm. where I believe every Saturday of the week, you get to queue up with your four other friends to make a team. And you're queuing up into other people that are similarly to your skill level mm-hmm. to play in a Battle Cup. how is this different from matchmaking? It's like, you know, when you go further, you get more prizes and stuff like that. So it does, yeah. Every Saturday, I'm just like, hey, I want to play Battle Cup, and then nobody plays with me because I have no friends. So feels bad, man. it always makes me want to play.
Forever alone.
That's the thing. It makes me want to play. Yeah.
And it's something to look forward to. Like, if it was available all the time, you wouldn't be as excited about it.
Oh, for sure. And I think you get, like, better competition, too, because you know the people that are making time to play in those events are people that, well, they try to take it seriously as well, right?
So. And the events in Eternal, like this one, it feels very casual, and I kind of like it. I like that, to be honest. Like, obviously, the price structure is such that it attracts all kind of people and even the spikes, but I don't feel bad for losing in this event at all. Like, I don't feel like I have to win, and it takes only a little bit of time, so I can see them making the events more casual just to attract a larger audience.
And that you don't feel cool. bad because it's 2,000 gold, right? You would feel bad if it's 10,000 gold.
For sure, but I don't think that you should make events that are that costly. I don't think that there should be a prohibitive entry cost.
I think if you're going to make an event with 10,000 entry gold, you announce it well in advance. So people, if they want to choose to save up, go for it, they can, right? It's very BM to be like, hey, there is an event for 10,000 entry gold starting tomorrow. Good luck, guys. That is not cool. Although, to be fair, you could grind gold much easier here than anywhere else. Yeah. So. Anyways, do you have any other particular feedback about the event?
No, I think we covered it.
I've only played twice. I went 1 and 2 with your trusty chalice deck, and then I was like, forget this. Going back to Armory, 7-1 easy. And I did great. And you said you finished... You play actually all three of your games for the ranking leaderboard. And
right.
You got how many wins for them?
Yeah, I went 5-2, 7-1, and 3-2.
15 wins, not bad.
Yeah, I was very happy with that, especially the 7 win, although it only got me a Ancient Terrazon, and I don't even know the other card. It was even worse,
yeah,
but still.
I mean, you're about that disenchanting the useless cards, right? So.
I don't do that anymore now that my collection is, like, pretty much done.
Yeah. Okay, so real talk for a second. If you have unlimited time and unlimited gold, which neither of us do have,
yeah,
do you play the event nonstop? Like, is this event better expected value, better EV than anything else that could be done in the future? Like, we could actually save shift stones now.
I am not sure because, yeah, the payout is insane and the amount of shift stone you get to acquire is very high. And... also, these events are just fun to play, so I like that. It's great. I would recommend this to everybody who doesn't have a fully built collection or a collection he's comfortable with, because they can get set 1 cards. But I personally don't need any set 1 cards anymore, so I actually only get a quarter of the value. Like, if those were new cards, I wouldn't have to craft them.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, by the time that people hear this...
Yeah, it's too late anyways.
Yeah, it's already gone. And, you know, maybe in the future the event is not going to be priced like this, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it won't be. Like, this is too generous, I think, for an event.
Even for Eternal, this is too generous.
Like, there's a point in life where you have to just say, okay, stop, it's too much.
every time I just sit here and I think, my God, how does Eternal make money?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that they just like bought gens for like 10 or 20 bucks just to support it, even though they didn't need it. And I did as well. Like, I'm still sitting on my stones.
That's the vocal minority, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. You might be right.
Yeah. Like, if you just spend the 10 bucks, you come out and say, yeah, I want to support DWD. But there's a lot of people that... didn't spend the 10 bucks.
That didn't,
and
yeah.
Didn't have
the 10 bucks and the 10 bucks is nothing. Like, that's... I mean, I played on the first day of open beta. I played against somebody and I just threw together, like, I don't know, whatever you can do with your starting decks. And I just went on ladder because I had a quest. And I played against somebody who had a fully premium Big Combre deck. And I was like, okay, so he at least paid, I don't know, maybe 1 month of rent for the for the office.
Well, maybe that person just played a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of games in the closed beta and opened like 300 packs. Didn't Iliad open like 250 packs or something?
Yeah, but you even with 300 packs, you can't build a fully premiumed out Big Combre deck. Come on.
Can't you? Probably you can't, huh?
I'm fairly
unless certain. Unless you open packs like a god, then you can.
But I mean, what are the
premium
odds, right?
Premium Sandstorm times after another, yes.
Okay, so I threw into all the legendaries and some of the rares, and I already am at 233,600 shift zone. So I'm not sure you can build a fully premium Combre deck from just opening packs.
All right. For science, thank you for testing it out.
Science.
Somebody
yeah,
did
sure.
have to pay rent for a month to play a fully Combre. All right. Okay, I think that is going to do it for this edition of the Top Deck Time. Thank you to the Fat Rat for providing the song, which is the Monody. That is going to be it for this episode. Any closing thought, Rico?
Super excited for next week. We will probably have a lot of cards, or at least some number of cards that are new and that we can talk about, and I'm super looking forward to that.
Yep, exactly the same here. Real life-wise, I'm flying back to Los Angeles to participate in a Dota event soon-ish, but I'll talk about more when that arrives. But for now, he's been Rico, I am Luminous, and thank you for listening to Top Deck Time. We'll see you next time. Bye, guys.